time the phone would ring.
Well, as you may have heard, we've finished season two with Nauvoo now, and it's on to greener pastures. So we thought we'd do something we haven't done before. We're going to do something called a State of the Podcast episode. We're going to kind of step back. We're going to talk about some things that we've noticed and just kind of what the experience is like. So here you go. A new experience.
Yeah, we thought we would talk, check in, not regale you with all our nerdy historical facts, although we can't help ourselves. It will come out in this podcast anyway. But talk about the state of the podcast. So first of all, we got our numbers back for 2021 and we're just shy of 1 million downloads, which is unbelievable.
That's a lot of zeros. Thanks, friends. Honestly, that blows my mind to hear that.
Me too, because I mean, Year of Polygamy was a huge success as far as downloads go, but I thought it was because of polygamy, right? Like it was, everyone wants to know about that. But Mormon history is a little bit more niche, yet people are listening like crazy. And you said every week people, or every day people are coming
in
the store.
That's wild. Yeah, that's, thanks for coming in to Benchmark and saying hi. That's so much fun to hear from people.
And we actually love it. We like eat up the praise. Yeah. We're supposed to, as Mormons, we're supposed to be like, no. We don't want your praise and adoration, but we do. We really do, especially on iTunes.
We have fun putting this together, and it sounds like that's coming through, and we're glad to hear it.
Oh, let's be 100% clear. We are doing this even if two people listened.
That's the thing is we message each other about, you know, this and that and, you know, stupid things we find and dumb jokes. And to know that you're enjoying it, that's just gravy.
That used to be just call lonesome 77203.
Just call. Hi, this is Lindsay Hanson Park.
And this is Brian Buchanan.
Bringing you the story of Mormonism from the shadow of the everlasting hills, straight out of Zion. This isn't your grandpa's Mormon history.
Well, I have sinned so gravely, Brother Brigham, Brother Young. I have sinned so gravely, Brother Young.
This is the tale of Mormon saints and sinners from our roots until present day. Saddle up.
Gird your loins, lock your hearts, and pay your tithing, because we're bringing you the story of Mormonism in all its paradisiacal glory.
It's the Sunstone History Podcast.
Well, I've sinned so gravely, Brother Brigham, Brother Young. I've sinned so gravely, Brother Young. That only you can save me, Brother Brigham, Brother Young. But only you can save me, Brother Young.
I believe I read a comment where they called you, okay, they called us ridiculously nerdy. I'll take it.
Yep.
We have nerd hats. It's fine.
I can't argue. I will not argue.
No, I mean, it was really fun because I met Brian podcasting through Year of Polygamy. So I was podcasting, you know, if anyone out there doesn't know, I have another podcast, Year of Polygamy, where I, as a little Mormon housewife, decide to go into the history of polygamy. My little girl was a baby at the time. You can sometimes hear her on my lap. And it's kind of embarrassing to me now to, like, when people say they listened to the whole thing, I was like, oh, that was years ago. What stupid thing did I say that I forgot? And I met Brian through the podcast. What was our very first episode? Do you even remember?
That we did together?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I can remember it very clearly. So I had just discovered the records of the first guys that start to get disciplined for post-Second Manifesto marriages. And I had met you through the store, through Sunstone and all that. And I thought, you know what? This is a fun story. And I asked you, would you be interested in doing an episode on this? And of course, Lindsay's like, anyone who ever wants to do an episode, yes, please.
I used to think like, that's how we hang out, right? That's how what's fun. And some people are like, can we do something that's not Mormon history? I'm like, what? Like what? Like
what else is fun beyond Mormon history? Come on, people.
Like go to a cemetery and look up names? Yeah, does that count?
There we go. Now that's,
and that's
like.
Yeah, Brian likes to hang out at cemeteries like a weirdo.
Whoa. Let's not say things we can't take back.
No, it's so true. I love it. So Brian, have I told you about my connection to cemeteries? So Brian likes to go around, like, especially in the Bountiful Cemetery. I think we did some video about this where he did a tour and he knows all the headstones and it's wild. Like, cute little Bountiful, who knew I had so much
winter
crazy.
Sucks. I haven't run there forever. It's terrible.
So he did that. But my own mother dresses in pioneer garb and does tours at the Murray Cemetery. Same thing.
I did not know that part.
Yeah, fun. She knows all about the Murray Cemetery. I'm pretty good at the Fountain Green Cemetery and a little bit Salt Lake, but that's like shooting fish in the barrel.
Geez, Salt Lake
like,
is
oh,
crazy.
There's Ella's ship. There's Emmeline Wells. Yeah, so we've done that. And then as we talked about in this podcast, we've done some adventures since the podcast, going to the FLDS compound in South Dakota as some of the first folks after the sheriff's sale to go through documents. That was fun. Interesting.
Our kind of fun.
What's the, like, if we were, like, the Indiana Jones of Mormonism, what's our theme song? Is it, like, Come, Come, Ye Saints, but, like, with bass guitar or something?
That sounds about right. I'd take that.
I think this is what they mean by our jokes. Like, they're cute. They're not funny.
They try hard.
They try hard.
Well, I think something that people, listeners, might be interested in is, how for you has this transition been going from Year of Polygamy, this wildly successful, mentioned in the New York Times, this kind of thing, to a broader topic, but still kind of the same idea. How has that been going from that to this?
Oh my gosh, it's been so much easier and more fun to do. And the reason is, Year of Polygamy was important, but it was really, you hear my journey, it's a painful experience for me. Most of it. In fact, a lot of it was traumatizing for me. I've had some really, really deeply traumatic experiences interacting with folks from the podcast or, you know, in certain dangerous fundamentalist communities and things like that. And probably the hardest part about Year of Polygamy, which still has not disappeared for me, is the topic affects so many people that I continue to get so much letters of folks who are in pain over the subject or over their experiences living in it or, you know, whatever. And that gets to me. And so what's equally hard as a Mormon woman growing up with like this desire to please everybody is I want to respond to every single message. I feel like everyone's experience is legitimately important. It's like going through the archives and reading the diary of a famous church leader versus just, you know, some random ward member in Cedar City. They're all important to me. They all matter. But I can't physically do that. I can't mentally do that. So leaving that behind for a little while and sort of engaging it whenever I feel like it has been good. But my true love that has grown out of it is Mormon history. And so through this podcast, it's like we get to do that. But the trauma is a lot more mitigated, I think, by the fact that the history that we're talking about is the unsavory parts are kind of already known, the pain points with Joseph Smith. And so we get to get into the weeds a little bit and give more context. And that's been really fun.
Another theme I think people would be interested in hearing about is, how has it been for you as a woman coming into a space that has been so largely dominated by men, coming in and creating this brand, this approach that really resonates with people?
Oh, that's a nice thing to say, Brian. This is why Brian and I are friends, because he was very supportive at the very beginning when I felt like an interloper and there were people in the community that, you know, really wanted me to feel that way. I think there's sort of this like hierarchy and political thing in Mormon studies, which is getting better, but I've seen it damage a lot of really good scholars. Their faith tests, how faithful are you? And if we have a problem with that, then we're going to come at your intellect. And of course, me growing up in rural Tooele for 12 years, I am a little folksy and colloquial. I can't say words right. I'm dyslexic. It's so for me to be in this space, especially as a woman, people think I'm ditzy, you know, that they've commented on everything, my looks, the way I talk.
How do you not have a shirt about chewing gum and flipping your hair yet?
And to be fair, nobody wants to hear you chew gum in their ear. I get that. But I did an interview once for Mormon Stories, and it was so hot that day. It was like in the hundreds inside. And so we were chewing gum, like sweating like crazy. It was a lot of people just told me what an idiot I was.
And I'm going to time you out there for just a sec, because that specific experience pissed me off so much, because that interview was so good. I've listened to that. It would be difficult for me to count how many times I've listened to that.
Really? I look back on it with shame as I do all my old interviews. I'm like, oh my gosh, I know so much more now. That I think I had done that right after my very first trip to Short Creek.
Okay. Yeah.
Or one of the early ones, because he was asking me about that. And I was like, oh, yeah, let me tell you. And, you know, now, of course, being there hundreds of times, living there for a little while, I've learned so much more about that town. But yeah, that's been hard. The hardest part is the condescension that I experience from men and from women. And in fact, I think it's more internalized for women in this space because it's so hard to be respected as a woman in our community. Listen, I'm not going to paint this whole broad brush that all the guys in Mormon studies are bad, because they're not. Everyone I've met is trying and they're nice, but we've all grown up in this culture, so we sometimes don't even see the patterns. And because it's so hard on women, I think women, some women get competitive. But then you have other women who have been so incredibly wonderful and, you know, sharing their research and mentoring rather than trying to tear you down. And so I've tried to model that, you know, in the work that I do. But yeah, it's hard. It's hard being a woman in this space. It's hard being reduced to how I look or talk or act sometimes.
It's so ridiculous that that even has to be a concern. Like, no dude goes on a podcast and then gets done. It's like, ooh, was I chewing gum or did I laugh or something? That's just not even a concern.
Well, and you remember, like, when I was podcasting and first went to Sunstone, that, you know, all of a sudden someone sends, you know, 200 anonymous letters to every news organization, historical department, everything.
Bookstores,
private organizations, to say that I'm a plagiarizer and I don't cite my podcast correctly. And I think at the time, you know, I'm just pulling stuff off the internet as a researcher. My historical training up until that point was like the DUP meetings that my grandma, my mom went, you know what I mean? And someone was so upset with that they, like, you know, tried to ruin my career. And I thought I was going to die when that happened. I just thought, you know, all my, you know, deepest fears about myself are true. Like, someone can see, like, I shouldn't be talking about this. We should leave it for smarter people. But then, you know, I think I've had people that have mentored me and they were able to mentor me through criticism like that. And if anything, I'm kind of grateful for that experience, in the sense that my stuff is solid now. Like, I check and double check and triple check. And every once in a while, I might confuse a date, especially when I'm talking off the cuff, you know, but it made me meticulous.
But everyone does that. And dudes don't have to apologize for this like women do.
Well, I'll just take that, like, you know, that inequity, and I'm going to turn it into something. It's going to make me better. That's kind of how I've been driven in this. And I think it's hard because I'm not an academic credentialed historian. And if I were an academic credentialed historian who went through all this hard work and all this money and effort, which, by the way, I've, you know, went through plenty of money and effort for my own college experience, but I would feel resentful if I saw some, you know, redhead gum chewing Tooele soccer mom come on and start talking about something that I had been studying for. Yeah, I can see that, but I would say for the most part, the Mormon historical community has been welcoming me with open arms. But there are a few people that will always use that against me. And actually, when I look back at some of my older stuff, some of it's fair. Some of it was sloppier. Some of it was missing context, you know? And that's what's beautiful about the podcast now, Brian, is we can talk. It's like a living canon of history. We can talk, we can correct, we can update. And that's what's so fun about our format.
Yeah. And I think that we've struck a good balance of introducing good scholarship, but also helping people see how fun and fascinating this is. And that's, I think, that's part of the reason that Year of Polygamy was also so successful, is that people got to see that the story was so much more complex and fascinating. If nothing else, these stories are just so compelling, tragic, triumphant at times, all these themes going on in them.
That's what was so liberating for me, and I think has been liberating about the podcast. And hopefully folks feel that way about our podcast. Again, we can talk about this in a minute, but I don't feel like we've really moved into the stuff that people don't know a lot about. Everyone knows about Nauvoo. We're just giving you, you know, good historical facts and dates on that. But wait until we get into the Utah period. Every single day, I'm working about four different projects right now that all put me in Southern Utah pioneer history in the Utah War. And I am reading the craziest stuff, like that thing I just showed you from Springville the other day.
Yep.
Can we tell that story really quick?
Oh, sure.
Did I show you the document?
You did, yes.
The handwritten note from the history of Springville, I believe in 1909 or something.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about it when it gets closer, but it was just a story about a guy during the Mormon Reformation, which is a time in the church when things are really crazy. I can't wait till we get to the Reformation on the podcast. It's my favorite thing to talk about, but it's just this extremism in Mormonism gets ramped up for a variety of reasons. And they come up with these questions. They catechize the members and they send around home teachers. This is where home teachers come from. And of course, they talk about this in Year of Polygamy too. But in Springville, apparently, during the Reformation, the police of Springville decide they're going to take it upon themselves to go catechize the members. Because remember, now in Frontier, Utah, there's no separation of church and state.
They're out in the middle of nowhere. They get to do their own thing.
Yeah. And maybe we should stop there and like leave that as a cliffhanger and not talk about what happens.
Yeah. Stay tuned for that story. It's pretty wild.
And I'm just like, you know, I'm just going through all of these cool documents and I find stuff like that every single day. And someone will say like, Lindsay, are you a sociopath? Like your eyes light up when you're talking about like battalion wars and massacres. And I was like, no, what's so great about it to me is not that they happened, but that we have evidence that our ancestors were human and very flawed and like got things wrong all the time. And to me, that's so exciting because in the Mormonism I grew up in, it was an opposite story and it put so much pressure on where we came from to uphold it that, you know, of course I've talked about this, did Mormon stories about this too. It led to an eating disorder for me, this perfection crisis. And so every time I hear about a time that, you know, our ancestors made a mistake, I'm like, I knew it. Like, life is hard for everybody. And I think I've talked about this on Facebook, but it's really important to me to stay connected to the heritage. And to me, doing the history is redeeming our dead. That's a very Mormon value of redeeming our dead. It's been ingrained in all of us. And for me, learning the history is redeeming our dead because we're finding out their mistakes and trying not to recreate them. And what else is redemption if not that?
It's been interesting. And that's for people who have ancestors who are part of these stories, it's even more compelling because these were your people. You mentioned the Springville story, and I told you this. One of my ancestors was the scribe for a time to the bishop there, Aaron Johnson. He's right in the thick of this story that you're reading, and that's just so interesting to see how our own people were all tied up in this.
Oh, yeah. I was at the DUP on Monday. It's so great.
Oh, yes.
This is so funny, but it's just going to the DUP museum is like going home to me. Whenever I feel very cut off sometimes from Mormonism, very exiled from some of my experiences when I started out the first podcast. There's a wound there, but when I'm at the DUP, I just feel like I'm with my people, you know? So I'm there and I was looking for a photograph in their little basement and I look up and on the wall is Wiley Payne Allred, one of my ancestors. I was like, hey, that's my guy. It's right there. So that's what's cool about it too, because you and I, we are connected to these people. And you guys might not know this, but Brian is a computer when it comes to family genealogy ties. Like his brain is like an ancestry.com file. If you come into the store and you're like, I'm a Bateman, he'll be like, Samuel or Jesse?
We had Bartles in today and I was asking them what they knew about John Wise journals. It's true.
When I take you down to the creek to Short Creek, Brian will get talking fundamentalist genealogy with these people. And I've known these people now for almost 10 years. I know their families. Some of them have become like my own family. And I cannot keep up with their polygamy genealogy. It's so complicated. But Brian, you remember all their mothers.
I'm always curious where they fit in because that helps me remember them. So later, that's how I kind of remember them. But it is so fun. And that's one of the things I've always found so interesting about Leonard Arrington is he was really, really good at that. And, you know, he would meet somebody in a conference and start talking to him. And then he'd start telling them stories about their ancestors. And he just, his history was a very personal experiences of people. Real,
you know,
people
what he wasn't living good at, though, is dating after 60.
Depends on who you talk to. That was a very curious
part of
his
diaries. It's so awkward to read his history. Yes. Sorry to interrupt you. I just had to make that joke.
That was fascinating. I think, I can't remember if I told you this, when Signature was publishing those, I was helping do a little, you know, behind the scenes research, and I tracked down one of the women he dated and nearly married. I was curious if she would...
You talked to her?
I emailed her.
Did she spill the beans?
She
was a perfect lady. Damn it.
I tried so hard to soften the approach because I realized it was a little weird for someone to come totally out of the blue this many years after and ask her about that part of her life. Unfortunately, she was not interested in talking because that would have been very interesting.
That would have been good.
She was a fascinating lady. Her story, I really wished she would have been willing to talk because that would have been fun. But something that people have asked is, how does the podcast actually become the finished product? And I think a lot of people don't realize that's one of your other learned skills that you've picked up along the way.
I just thought people assumed that I was making it because you can hear all the crappy mistakes I make. I mean, here's the thing. I am kind of a Luddite. I really am. Like, I hate getting a new phone. I would still be having my flip phone if it were, you know, up to me. I don't like the technology. I don't like learning it. But I've really enjoyed the art of podcasting, like the whole creation of it. I'm not saying I'm perfect. That's why early years of Year of Polygamy, oh my gosh, it's still so embarrassing to me because it's just so amateur, you know? And which I think is part of the charm of it, or so they tell me. I just, like, there's this deep patina of shame that I just can't see through. But yeah, I love editing. I'm really used to looking at audio files now, so I can dry edit is what I call it. I just edit without listening to it. Just kind of fun. I like a challenge. But we were talking about this tonight. The worst thing in my life is losing my audio. When you've recorded something, especially when you have guests and you lose your audio, it's so devastating. Yeah, I do that. I add the music. Music is such an important thing to me. It's a lifesaver. If anyone that knows me knows, I usually have music on in the background. And so I've enjoyed that. So basically what happens is, and Brian, jump in anytime, we write the script together. Well, we sort of rough out a topic, and then we each take a topic, an assignment. And how I've been categorizing it, if anyone cares, is if I've written the episode, my name is listed first on the file. And if Brian's written it, then his name is written first.
I didn't even know that.
It's just a way to be equitable and to, I told you, I'm, you know, obsessed with attribution since, you know, I've been criticized of otherwise. So we do that. And then we kind of tool the script. Then we record it cold. We don't practice or anything. So then we record it. And usually we have, you know, a guest like Chris Smith, Ben Park. I'm really excited to have Katie Rich on more this year. So we have a guest come on, and then I take the file, edit it, and we add the music, and then we upload it to Sunstone and into your ears. Is that all you wanted to know about it?
Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah, people have asked me multiple times who produces it, so.
I had a sound technician tell me that my sound was off, so I'm working on it. I'm learning new things. It's been a joy and a delight to do that.
And another thing that people are slowly learning about is that you have been involved for the last little while on a very big project that will make some big waves.
Yeah, I've got to be careful what I talk about right now, just because it's not out yet. But I have had permission to announce that I'm working on the limited TV series for Hulu and FX, Under the Banner of Heaven, based on the John Krakauer book. And I get it. I can hear all you
John
Mormons booing.
John Krakauer, Under the Banner of Heaven?
Listen, I say this, and I don't mean this to be condescending, but I it's very fashionable for Mormons within our community to hate that book. And I understand it, especially since many of us are not practiced at hearing our story told from an outside perspective, even within the Mormon historical community.
And the ugly parts of it.
Oh, and the fundamentals, which we'll get into. But like, if you look at like the Alta newspaper in California writing about the Mountain Meadows, people will lose their minds about it and say it's not a valid source because it's written from an outsider. And of course, I've tried to center the voices of Mormons telling about their own experiences, but outsiders have valuable insight as well. They have perspective that we sometimes don't have. And I don't know. It's been hard for me because I actually liked Krakauer's book. I think he's a good writer.
I did too.
People will say they hate his other stuff or whatever. My experience with John Krakauer has always been positive. He spoke at Sunstone a few years ago. I interacted with him with his work at Short Creek, and I will say I feel like he really puts his money where his mouth is. A lot of people don't know that he helped assist in getting Warren Jeffs arrested. He expended resources, money, time, energy, effort, his own personal safety to do that. And I think that that's more than most people who talk, you know, in this community. But the issue is that the book talks about, like you said, the harder parts of our history and Mormon fundamentalism. And so there's a huge like instinct still, even in ex-Mormons, like to distance LDS mainstream from fundamentalists. And to me, like, yes, they're separate, but they're also similar. So, you know, it's just the same family. It's just a different brother or sister. So, yeah, I think that's part of it. But Dustin Lance Black has written the script. He comes from a Mormon background. He has a book out that you can read about his experience. His Mormon experience is very interesting and very worth a read. He's a lovely, genuinely lovely Mormon boy. Like when we went to his house up in Canada, we were shooting up in Canada. He whipped out a Jell-O salad like it was second nature. So
it
proud
was
of him.
Second nature.
So yeah, we'll be able to talk about it. I'm sure, you know, there are going to be things people don't like for sure. And I won't really have a say on the outcome at the end. But Andrew Garfield, Spider-Man, is playing one of the main characters. That's what I'll say. And yeah, it's been the adventure of a lifetime. I think a lot of people are like, Lindsay, why you? You know, and I don't know. I'm just really blessed, as they say.
You know how to make folks get interested in history.
I think what was valuable is I'm not the most, there are historians that know way more about all the topics than I do, but I know everybody. I worked with a lot of historians on this, and we'll be able to talk more about that too later when it comes out on Hulu. But, you know, I can synthesize information really quickly. I am a fast, fast writer. And so in this kind of environment, you have to be working with hundreds of people all at once, all asking you questions.
Changing things on the fly.
Changing things. And, you know, and hopefully when it comes out, we'll talk more about this, because I'd really like to talk about the challenges with accuracy now that I've experienced it. Because, you know, I'm one that's like, I want my movies accurate. But I can see now why things get lost in translation and why people make choices and all that. So, yeah. That's been a really exciting thing. And I will tell you, the cast and crew are like listening to this podcast. So if you guys are listening, hello up in Calgary.
And because this will bring the book back into attention again, we should also mention that friends of ours are working on a series where people will contribute short essays on the book and the impact of the book and the themes of the book that Juvenile Instructor blog will host. And so there's going to be a lot of talk about this part of Mormon history over the next few months.
Oh yeah, go to our pal Christina Rossetti. Her and I were arguing about Crack Hour because she doesn't like the book and she's a non-Mormon, right? So her critique is really interesting and I think fair. But yeah, they're going to be collecting stuff. So if you're interested in that book or that topic, that's definitely the place to have a conversation about it, because I think I'm going to try to submit something to it and we might get some of the folks. I would really like our costume people or something to be involved. But anyway, I'm going to turn the mic on you now, because we've talked plenty about me, exactly 30 minutes. So I think you're more of the enigma. People know about me because I'm very open on your Polygamy podcast, but you're kind of a mystery. In fact, I've had people ask me if you are a secret fundamentalist.
Yep. Can't imagine why.
It's not that he's interested in fundamentalist genealogy or anything.
It's not like I have shirts with John White Bartlett's face on them.
It's not like you've stood in fonts, many different baptismal fonts from fundamentalist leaders. So I want to talk about just who you are first. Like, just give us some basic, you know, Mormon genealogy.
So like Lindsay, I have lots of pioneer ancestry. So I've been familiar with the narrative of Mormon history my whole life and was very interested in it. And so as I got to college age, actually even before that, during seminary years, I had a really influential teacher who kind of was good at opening up new rabbit holes. And then John Peterson, who wrote the book on the Black Hawk War, wonderful friend, opened up yet more rabbit holes. And so as a college kid, I really started getting into the weeds and started finding out what books were good and getting exposed to all that. And then that led to working at Benchmark Books and being right in the trenches of it all and meeting these people who had written these books that I had loved. That was fascinating. And then getting to know you through Sunstone and all, it just, doors kept opening to more interesting portals to Mormon history.
So I often say that I've only ever talked to you about three things, and that's Mormon history, Ute basketball, or the Beatles.
It's
Is there anything else there? Mexican food, maybe?
Mexican food.
So Brian has really great taste in Mexican food. So we're always like, whenever we're out traveling or on our adventures, finding good Mexican food has been important. Give us a recommendation if folks are in Utah.
Ooh, if you go up to Bountiful, there's a hole-in-the-wall place, El Dorado, that has some...
Is that the taco place we went to?
That was the one we went to, yes, when Tim was in town.
My favorite is the one, the Chili Amor.
That oh also very good, yep.
Their queso dip?
Yes.
Yes, please. Yep. Yeah, and I took you to the new one here everyone loves, Casa del Tamal, right?
Ooh, yes, I love that tamales. Place is that was fantastic. Amazing.
Okay, so that was still pretty vague. You just didn't give us anything new. You like Mormon history. You have a family. You work at a store. Just like, tell us personal human things.
Yeah, it's funny. My kids, they know that I do the podcast, but they, you know, they're all fairly little too, so they... You know, that's I mentioned to Mark Elwood that the most interest I've ever gotten was when I was looking through Glasslooker and my son came down and saw that and was, ooh, what's that? That looks fun.
That does look fun. That book's awesome. And yeah, you any hobbies outside of the stuff that you like?
It's all sorts of sports. Yeah, that's I'm getting too old to play much of it now, but I do love sports and
How tall are you?
I'm 6'9". That's the one of the funny parts. People come into the store and meet me. And Chris is the same with Chris Bench. That
I know, they're giants in that store.
We've had multiple people that look around the counter, assuming that we're on like some pharmacist thing behind there.
I know, you guys are Game of Thrones characters or something. I don't know. So can we talk about your Hebrew stuff for a minute? Because I think that's like the... I don't even know how long I knew you before I knew that you did this and you wrote a book. Like, this is what it's like being with Brian. I'll know him for years. He'll like travel with me and then one day I'll get a picture on my phone of a newborn baby and I'm like, that's cute baby. What is it? And it's his. He had a baby. Like, well, I mean, his wife had a baby. That do you speak Hebrew?
Not great. So that's, yeah, in college, that's what I went to school for. And it was really helpful because it taught me careful attention to detail. It taught me how to think about texts. Where do they come from? Who wrote them? How do they relate to other texts? That kind of thing. That's really helpful. Just textual criticism has some very, very helpful tools. And that's something that's not always well appreciated in Mormon history as much as it should be. Every historian ought to take a textual criticism class. It would do wonders for them.
And tell us about your book that you just edited.
Yes. Anyone who knows Gary Bergera knows that he's sort of like Lindsay in that he's constantly trying to find people to get involved and do stuff. And so he came to me with the Signature was rebooting their idea of collected essays. And back in the 80s and 90s, they did this series of wonderful books from everything from line upon line on doctrinal topics to tending the garden on literature and one on gender and sexuality, one on the Book of Mormon, one on Joseph Smith, these great books. And they were rebooting this idea. And he asked if I would like to do one on a follow-up to his line upon line that I loved so much. So that was a fun project. There were some fascinating people, folks that I knew, like our dear departed friend Shannon Flynn, to folks that I knew of but had never met, like Blair Osler. So it was really fun getting a good group of folks that had some very diverse opinions and interesting angles on things. So that was a fun project. It was theology and doctrine, so it was outside of my usual stomping grounds of history. So that was...
Yeah, that's what... I mean, maybe I'm just a bad friend because I was in the store and I looked down at this box that they were unpacking and I was like, Brian Buchanan, what is this? And you're like, oh, it's my book. When did you write a book? Why have you never said anything? Where have I been?
Yeah, you know me. I'm people listening to the podcast might be surprised to learn that I'm actually fairly quiet and don't necessarily talk a lot.
That's what I wanted to ask because like, I'm actually surprised you podcast because you're a very private person. Outside of those three topics, I've literally never heard you say anything else. You have secret babies sometimes. And
with one wife only, let's just be clear. One wife only.
Exactly. So why podcasting? Why is that a medium that you've been comfortable with? Because started with the Year of Polygamy. It was always a thing.
I can still remember. We were sitting there. I was on a stool, and I was incredibly nervous. Because I, you know, these were stories that I loved and I was interested in, but the thought of, because by that point, when we did that episode, that was well into the second 100 episodes. And so that, by that point, Year of Polygamy was a big deal and everyone knew it. And so that was a little nerve-wracking sitting there. So.
Well, and then I don't even know how this one came into being, but the one that we're doing now, but.
I do. It was your genius idea.
Well, of course it was. Of course I'm a genius. No, but how did you say yes? How did I get you to say
You're
yes?
You're incredibly persuasive as how.
It's been so fun because, like I said, and we'll talk about this in a minute, the Navi stuff is not our jam, but we do like going on adventures together. And it's so fun for me to be with someone like Brian who just is so enmeshed in the history that you're not bored with it. You know, if we're down at any place, we're looking for, we have fun the same way. We think the same things are cool. And there's a very small collective group of our friends
There's only a couple people on earth who we can message saying, "Ooh, look what I found." And they will also think it's cool.
Yeah, and know what we're talking about. Well, except for you. You throw new stuff out all the time. You find some good stuff. Let's just ask, what are some of the weird rabbit holes that you're into right now?
Fundamentalist history just continues to fascinate me. So that's been fun over the last few years. And one that just sort of landed in my lap is this guy who I'm going to do an article on him and call him the first fundamentalist. And he has a story. Friend of the podcast, Chris Blythe, gave me some sources on kind of his later trajectory outside of Mormonism. That's wild and crazy. It gets him in newspapers all across the country. So that's, as you know, this is such a fun part of Mormon history because there are so many new things to find. And a lot of the sources are still unknown. We're still turning up new stuff. That's a thing with the Joseph Smith era is those sources are pretty well nailed down by now. It's not common to find big new stuff. So.
No, but I mean, one of the things I love that you're figuring out, and if anyone out there has these, send them to Brian because he loves this, Mormon code language.
Yes.
You know a lot about our codes. Yes.
Oh, those are so fun. That's you and I've talked about. We got to do a presentation at Sunstone on this because there's all these, you know, they range anywhere from John D. Lee's genius, I'm going to spell 50 backwards so no one will figure out the Council of 50.
Or his acrostic poems, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. But they get very involved. The Joseph Musser era guys, when they meet, they used code for names and places in there.
Oh, the Mormon underground codes are crazy.
Those are fun. My all-time personal favorite is Nathaniel Baldwin, Mr. Radio Factory secret fundamentalist guy.
Invented the headphones, brought to you by Mormon polygamist fundamentalists.
And who was building all of them? All the early fundamentalists at the Radio Factory. But early on, to keep certain things secret, he would transliterate things into Greek and put it, and this is in his own diary.
I remember when you found that. How long did it take you to crack that?
Oh, it took a long time because I was looking at his diaries at the Church History Library. And I ran into that first entry where he did it, and it was so unexpected. And so without even thinking out loud, I said, why is he suddenly writing in Greek? And who is next to me at the microfilm reader but our other dear departed friend, Mike Quinn? And of course, because it's Mike Quinn, he says, oh, you must be reading Nathaniel Baldwin's journals.
Of course, he wrote. Speaking of internet
Jeez
brain.
Jeez Louise, he didn't even have to talk to him about that. And that was a real feather in my cap because he had never cracked it.
Yeah, that I remember fun. That story. And so he didn't crack it, but you cracked it. We're going to have to talk about that.
Yeah, he's fun. And that's our friend Christina has a really fun, like almost like a shadow box. She got a pair of his headphones and that sit on her wall.
Oh, that's so cool that she got that. And we need to have Christina on more. Yeah. I mean, we're definitely going to as we get into later periods, but it feels like that'll be forever away. Yeah, I think I was reading Thales Haskell's journal again, where he has a whole page in Desert Alphabet. Mm.
Yeah.
Which is fun too. But I mean, I don't think that's the same as the codes that you're into. Okay. So let's talk about the store now, because everybody knows Benchmark Books. We talk a lot about it, but that's like your day job. And if you didn't think Brian was nerdy before, picture him literally surrounded by stacks of Mormon books, of which I think you know every single word in every single book.
It's such a fun place. That's the thing is, I really pity someone who has to get up in the morning to go to a job that they don't really like, because going to work is so entertaining. Chris and I have just such a fun time. And we, if you follow the store on Facebook or Instagram, you'll know last month we did kind of a blitz to highlight some of the just truly amazing things that come through the door. And, you know, right now, for example, we have this two-volume set of The Bible as Art. Just this beautiful, beautiful piece, these wonderful engravings. But it's a set that Joseph F. Smith gave to one of his plural wives. And it has this page-long, very heartfelt, candid inscription in his own handwriting to her. Just really a treasure of the past.
It really is your chance to feel like Indiana Jones. That's when I feel like Indiana Jones, whenever I go in the store and they're always showing me some.
We love playing show and tell.
Dun, 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 dun. So tell us about the store. Like, just give us a brief description of what Benchmark is and why it's been around so long.
So it's a very unique store because there really, no one else has kind of the what we do. So we do in the new books, we have a lot of the kind of more of the scholarly end of the spectrum. So University Press titles and stuff by BCC Press and all these folks out there, Greg Coford, Signature, all these places that are doing amazing stuff, but that's really hard to find in a store where you can actually look at it and see what it's like. But then we do used and out of print stuff also. And that's where everything is on the table. I mean, we've got fundamentalist pamphlets. That's we just highlighted one of the posts we did. We have a copy of the first pamphlet published by one of the LeBarons. I had never before seen one of those. And
I think, you know, people will be like, I get Rough Stone Rolling on Amazon or whatever. Yeah, that sounds convenient, but I'm not just saying this to plug the store. This is absolutely true. If you want a good experience buying a Mormon book, call Benchmark Books on the phone anywhere in the country. You ship at anywhere, don't you?
No, that's, we've got customers. When Anne was still working there, Anne Wild, a friend of hers was working in Saudi Arabia. So we've sent stuff there. And
it's an experience because you'll get Brian or Chris on the phone and they will tell you about any book and they will know where it is. They'll find anything. If like the rare, crazy, hard to find stuff, you've probably seen it on the podcast, Brian knows, but you should all be supporting it. It should be like the official like Mormon Studies book hub because it's so great.
It's so fun. And who knows who will wander through the door. One day I came in and Mike Quinn is sitting in my chair, hanging out, talking. And it's such a fun place because all the folks come in.
And a lot of like fundamentalists shop there, FLDS.
Absolutely. We had some ladies in today and we were talking about things. And yeah, it is a very interesting meeting place of Mormons of all sorts of stripes. And this is why Benchmark and Sunstone have always gotten along so well, because it's that same idea of any flavor of Mormon, never Mormon, interested in Mormon history, come on in.
I don't know that Sunstone was always that way, but I was thinking about that, you know, at Kurt Bench's funeral, Kurt Bench, who was the owner who passed away this last year, which has been a hard thing for the store and for Brian and Chris, who knew him so well. And for me, Kurt was a dear friend of so many people. But at his funeral, it was just, we were in an LDS chapel and it was so discursive, the stories that they told. And they were all just about how Kurt was so willing to be open-minded to, you know, all this diversity within Mormonism. And I thought, wow, you know, Benchmark really has been doing that longer than anyone. You guys, you really do. No offense to everyone listening who all fit under this category, but they get all kinds, like all kinds of people, all different kinds of Mormons. You can bring your very faithful, active mother in like I did and then be walking down the stairs and see Jared Hess there. It's just, it's so great. So fun.
Yeah, and it's so fun meeting listeners that come into the store. That's been a real unexpected delight.
I know Brian's getting a taste of the old Mormon podcast fame now.
in our...
But when people take a picture of with you, they come up to your belly button.
That's one of the most entertaining photos is the one the two of us were talking at Sunstone and somebody got it. And that I forget sometimes how little you are.
I was in heels that day too. I think we had it. So another thing about Brian that is really fun is he introduces me to crazy adventures too. He says, I'm always doing it. No, he took Christine and I to the Wood Museum. We can talk about that. But that picture where you're standing there and Christine and I look Laurel Wives on each side of you. And by the way, you're wearing your John Y. Barlow. No. You're wearing the Mighty and Strong
shirt. Yeah. Yep.
We look like two little toddlers next to you.
That was a good adventure.
Yeah, the Wood Museum. We should podcast about that sometime.
We should. In fact, the FLDS women that we're in today were looking for books about William Clayton, and I told them, you played the William Clayton organ.
I did.
All rules of archivists everywhere.
I know. Barbara Jones Brown is like gasping. The adventures have been fun. So you don't mind if people message you. Maybe let's talk one more about the Edith Romney project.
Ooh, that's a good idea. This has been fun. I've been glad to see that it's slowly taking root, but we saw this today when you were looking through this fantastic journal. And one of the first questions you got was, is there a transcription of it? And that's something that is so helpful. I've got a friend who's been working on projects, and he's much younger than me, and the cursive, trying to read 19th century handwriting if you don't know cursive is nearly impossible.
Yeah, I've been talking about this for a while. It's been 2 years in the making now, writing Juanita Brooks's biography, an updated biography, and it will never be finished, and I will never get it done. But... one of the things she was so gifted at was transcribing, you know, hundreds of pioneer journals. Brian is so good at that too. He can read cursive like you wouldn't believe. I can't. I really struggle. I think the thing that I had sent you today, I couldn't read the name. And the value of having something transcribed, I read a journal today. I was helping a friend on a project and read 197 pages of journal this afternoon, and it was all in cursive. And I just think if that were searchable, the stuff I found in it, you know, second anointing and self-abuse, post-manifesto, like stuff that researchers doing, you know, these papers on these projects could search. And so that's what Brian is trying to do with this project. And I think it's a gift to history everywhere. It's a special gift to Mormon history. And so the people who have volunteered to transcribe, thank you for doing that. And I'm just going to put this out here for Brian. We would love someone to commit to donating some money to getting a legit website for that, or help with that, so it can be ongoing and, you know, out there and known. So if you're interested in supporting that, let us know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. I totally forgot about that. That was a good plug for that.
So, and I'm just going to throw this out there while you're at it. We need support for the podcast. Sunstone is run completely on donations. We made news this year by partnership with the lovely Jeff Green, which is great. But, you know, we're still going to have to raise a lot of money to be viable. And so we need your help. The podcast takes hundreds of hours of work, so much work. And we, like I said, we would do it for free, but
We'd rather not.
I mean, we couldn't do it for free. That's the problem, is we wouldn't be able to. So thank you for those who have already supported it, and go ahead and do that. And so now let's talk about this year and the podcast and what we've got coming up.
After leaving Nauvoo, it was such a stark divider. A friend was in the store today and he brought this incredible set of Joseph and Hiram Smith death masks. And we were looking at those, and it just reminded me, his set is clearly an early copy, and so it's very, very detailed, and you just see the destruction that happened to them. And I think that's something that modern Mormons don't really think was how shattering and traumatic that end to Nauvoo was. And that's nowhere better shown than in those death masks. They were killed. They were killed through an act of extra-legal justice, through a complex series of events that we went through, and that was the end of Nauvoo.
Yeah, one of the hard things for me to acknowledge, because when I was in sort of my really angry phase with, you know, feeling like I had been taught history that wasn't complete or accurate, I was just like, wait a minute, the persecution narrative that I grew up with, which is that Mormons were always picked on and it justified every choice that they made. I really reacted to that and was like, no, we're bringing a lot of this on ourselves, as we talked about in the podcast. But I've had to also contend with just the horrific tragedy that it was that there was always a tug of war with Mormons and outsiders. And yes, the Mormons brought a lot of it on themselves, but sometimes the persecution that happened to them, there's something to be said about that. And I've had to sort of contend with that in this period, in the Missouri period, and some of this research. And that's hard because I want the story to be easy. You know, even though I love Mormon history and I like nuance, my human brain is like, make it simple, black or white, cut it down to a TikTok video, you know? And it's a violent history on all sides.
And we've seen the seeds of schism be sown here. But that's another fascinating theme that will develop in this next season is Mormonism is about to start spinning off a whole lot of folks. We're going to get James Strang's very successful for a time campaign to woo away lots of Mormons. We're going to see Sidney Rigdon and then later William Bickerton. And we're going to see eventually the Reorganized Church. And so all of this force that spins folks off, that will ramp up very quickly.
And I think we're going to cover this season, winter quarters, summer quarters. I'd like to start talking about some of the Indian missions that start. I've been reading about that today, actually, and some of the missions elsewhere, which are now going on at the time. So I know like that has not been a sexy time in Mormon history. It's not Nauvoo. It's not, you know, Brigham Young.
Winter quarters is so wild and interesting.
It's so crazy. I think that, you know, we're going to learn a lot about STIs from our ancestors sleeping around and murdering people and beating people up. And that's just part of it. Like, it really is a crazy history. I can't wait till we get into, you know, the Mormon Trek, the San Bernardino. I can't wait to talk about Sam Brannan, Zion, as Joe Geisner always says. We've got so much cool stuff ahead. I need to walk instead of run because I want to run ahead and, you know, get to the end first because there's so much to talk about. And that's what's so fun is hopefully with everyone's support, we're going to be podcasting for a long time.
We joke, you know, only kind of tongue in cheek sometimes about topics like, yeah, let's pencil that in for 2025.
How many times have we bookmarked a topic? We'll be reading something and we're like, we've got to talk about this in the future. Start making a list so we don't forget. Yeah, so this year, I think we're going to talk about that stuff, which, the succession crisis, obviously. And then, you know, Katie Rich's stuff, which I keep talking about. I'm so excited to talk about her stuff, which she talks about. Well, I'm not going to say. I'm going to let her come on and say. But there's some really cool stuff ahead. And I think hopefully our listeners will stick with us through it. I think we're just getting started.
Yep. That's, if you've enjoyed it so far, things will become more colorful. We'll go down rabbit holes that you may not even have heard of before. And it will be a lot of fun.
And I felt like we were slogging through Nauvoo, which this is not a slight at any. Yeah, I think this is where you and I are just going to start having fun, though. I mean, I love learning new things as I research. And so that's where I get really excited when I find this tangent or rabbit hole. Like, you know, I didn't know much about summer quarters. I didn't even, in my mind for a long time, Mormons were in Nauvoo and then they came over to Utah and that was it. You don't realize that a lot of Mormons didn't and a lot of stayed in the East and there were all these Mormon communities all over the world developing and have continued. And so we're going to hopefully talk about those. If you're out there and you have stories, family histories from your great-great-grandfather that was, you know, in the islands or something and you have something you want to share, we always love to see that stuff.
We've gotten some really interesting emails from listeners who have asked about specific aspects of their family history that are fascinating, and we're going to use some of those as the backbone to talk about events and periods.
Oh, yeah. We've loved the folks that have reached out, especially with the fundamentalist stuff that we've seen. You know, when people send us their documents, this is just a shout out to, like, our friend Brad, who just, you know, let us go through some documents. It's really fun. So, yeah. What else do we want to say about the upcoming podcast other than hang tight because we're just gearing up for the craziness that is Mormonism.
The jokes at the Mercantile are going to get even better going forward.
They will because the Mercantile is going to turn into a co-op and everyone's going to contribute.
Jokes are always better down at the ZCMI.
Our jokes are really stupid. We can't help it. They're really funny to four people who get, oh, I see what they did there. They were making a joke about Joseph Musser.
That's why we like you four people.
We're glad that four of you are laughing. But yeah, I just want to personally thank everyone who's followed me from Year of Polygamy. It's been so good for my mental health to not be talking about that stuff all the time and to be able to, interact with my heritage in a more fun way. I keep saying, and you're plugging me, we're going to do this. I don't know what the future holds. Right now I'm looking for supporters or donors that can help, help me get a better website and archive that stuff better. So I'll probably do that. But really my focus is on building this podcast. Seeing how many downloads we got this year was just, for a little Mormon podcast, it was so crazy to think about. And like I said, I don't even feel like we're getting good yet.
Oh, we will have much more fun going forward.
I do want to say we've had so many listeners, so many reach out. And I, like I said, we love it. It's so good to know that it's valuable to you. I mean, it comes without saying that we get criticism too. Like, and it's just stupid stuff. Like I got called, I think Peggy Stacks said the other day, she got called a satanic witch. And I was like, yeah, I know that feeling. We get called all kinds of things from people who...
Women do frequently.
Do you not? Have you not gotten called a dirty apostate or...
Nope.
What spirit of Jezebel or...
It's nice to see that the double standard applies kind of everywhere. So
it really is. Like people say horrible things. And I think because I'm a woman that says them and I say them and I don't use complete academic language all the time. This is why people say, why don't you publish more? People are awful. And, you know, I have some trauma there about like putting stuff out. But we'll see. Brian, have you published a lot of stuff other than
a book? Oh, no. Lots of projects in the work.
But. You need to publish more stuff. I really think that all the projects that you're talking about, hopefully we'll be able to talk about here. So yeah, thanks for listening, for supporting us.
It really has been fun talking to people. I'll be talking to folks on the phone and you'll say, you know, you're a listener. You'll come into the store and talk to me. It's just really fun. And it's been so fascinating to hear from family members even. That have discovered the podcast. It's clearly you people are enjoying this and that's fantastic.
I think what's fun about Brian is some people will tell me like, you know, worried about that you're a big deal now because you're on the podcast. So they're like worried to go in. I was like, go into Benchmark. If you're asking him a Mormon history question, you'll be friends for life.
Come on in. We'll have good times.
So yeah, Benchmark is located in South Salt Lake. Look it up. It's online. Like I said, buy your books there. Support Sunstone. Please support the podcast. We need it. Brian and I, COVID pending, have some really fun retreats and in-person events we want to plan. So we hope to get those going. So if you want to go on some adventures with us, we're going to, you know, take a few folks from the podcast sometimes. So yeah, we've got big plans. And like I said, we're just getting started. We put these out every other week and we want to put them out weekly. We really want to make sure our stuff is solid. So it takes a little bit longer and you can help by supporting Sunstone at sunstone.org or please come to our conference. That's how Sunstone survives every year. And you showing up and interacting means the world to me. It means the world to Brian. He's there with Benchmark. We will definitely be doing a panel probably this year again.
And people are going to have to come defend their nerd hats. So.
Oh yeah. And we're going to do our trivia. We did a trivia night last time and that was so fun. So definitely going to do that again. And I wonder who's going to win. It's Cheryl Bruno's going to win. She knows everything.
That was really fun. That was one of the most entertaining things we've done in a long time. So
yeah. So thanks for all that have supported us. And we hope you're enjoying the podcast. And we look forward to this new season. Spill my blood upon the earth, oh brother Brigham, brother Young. I beg you, spill my blood, oh brother Young. And let it smoke ascend to heaven, brother Brigham, brother Young. And let my breast be cut asunder, brother Young. As an offering for my sins, a smoking incense, brother Young. A blood atoning for my sinning, brother Young. Cause I sinned so gravely, brother Brigham, brother Young. I have sinned so gravely, Brother Young. That only you can save me, Brother Brigham, Brother Young. The song you heard today is called Brother Brigham, Brother Young by an artist, Corb Lund. Check out his music at corblund.com and consider giving a donation to sunstone.org to support this podcast.